Okay, guys.
Just to remind everyone, this is shiur number 3. We talked a little bit about creativity in general, and then the second shiur spoke about creativity in Torah, in particular, Elo ve'elo divrei Elokim chayim. If he doesn't have a source sheet, take a source sheet. Okay, I want to get down to some of the nuts and bolts, and what are the logical foundations of Shas and of analysis. The basic premise is that Torah Sheba'al Peh is not a separate autonomous system, but it comes from Torah Sheba'al Peh. And you would expect that the same tools that are used to analyze Torah Sheba'al Chsav would then, as derivatives, the logical derivatives would then be applied to understanding the intra-system analysis of Torah Sheba'al Peh. You wouldn't expect there to be certain tools that Chazal used to draw limudim from Sukkim and then completely separate tools to iron out ideas within the system. So by looking back at the Midos HaTorah Nidreshes Bohem, we can see a map for some of the tools that Chazal are employing, even when they're not involved, as we would say in English, in exegesis, learning from Sukkim, but just analyzing the actual logic of a Sukkim. So I want to show you today the 6 principles that I feel, I haven't seen this in any sefer here, please take a sheet, that I feel can be used as a catalog of all the tools that Chazal use, and essentially those 6 logical ideas stem from the list of Midos HaTorah Nidreshes Bohem. Now that sounds strange, because you all know the Bishmolot had 13 Midos HaTorah Nidreshes Bohem. So the answer is as follows. That list of Rabbi Yishmael was itself a derivative of an earlier list. The Tosefta in Sanhedrin talks about Hillel presenting 7 Midos to the B'nai B'Terah. The B'nai B'Terah were this dynasty of Nasi Beisdins that passed down from generation to generation. We know them most by Rabbi Yehuda ben Beterah, but there are many ben Beterah. And there was this pivotal moment described by the Gemara in the beginning of the sixth parak of Pesachim, where Erev Pesach was Chal on Shabbos, and no one really knew whether you could bring a Karban Pesach on Shabbos, so the Karban Pesach is Dacha Shabbos. So they put out a big announcement, and it later ended up being a machlokas between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva versus Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva versus Rabbi Eliezer. That was a few generations later. This is already in the days of Hillel, which is a few generations before Rabbi Akiva. Put out a big announcement. Who knows how to solve this problem? He said, oh, there's a man who just came up from Bavel. His name is Hillel HaBavli. And Hillel HaBavli gave them both a Kal V'chomer and a Gzer Shabbat to prove that Karm Pesach is, this is only Gemara, Karm Pesach is Dach Shabbos. And that day, basically, B'nai B'Serah waived their rights to being the Nasi Beisdin, and they handed it over to Hillel, because they realized that this man knew more Torah than them. And interestingly enough, the Gemara in the Yishalmi says, source number 3, Shlosha hinichu kisron ba'olam hazeh, there are 3 people who waive their honor in this world, the Yarshu Chayam Abba. Because of that, the Yarshu Chayam Abba, one of them are the B'nai B'Serah. Elazar ben Azariah, Yonatan ben Shaul, and Elazar ben Azariah was appointed the Rosh Hashiva, but then when they rehabilitated Rav Gamliel, he seeded the way for Rav Gamliel to return. So this whole story is in the second source, this whole story that I just paraphrased. So Hillel was at this very, very pivotal transition, and he proved to everyone that Karban Pesach was Dach Shabbos based on the Kal V'chomer, as well as the Gzeirah Shavah. At some point, Hillel HaZaken compiles a list of 7 Midos, which by and large can be reduced to 5. 2 of them are just subcategories of the other 2. If you look at the Midos, and we'll talk about the 5 today, and then I'll tell you where we get to 6. Sheva Midos, source number 1, Darash Hillel Lefnei Ziknei B'Seira. Kal V'chomer is 1. Gzeirah Shavah is 2. Binyan Av, Kosevecha, Binyan Ashnei Ksuvim. We'll talk about the differences, but they're basically a Binyan Av, as we'll see what logically that means. Vishnei Ksuvim, Vipratu Klal. Okay, so let's talk about more or less 4 from this list. Kal V'chomer, Gzeirah Shavah, Binyan Av, and Klal Uprat. Then a little bit later, Davar Halame Binyano. That would be the 5th. Okay, so he talked about, again, I'm assuming right now that Shnei Ksuvim Habayin Ki Achad is not a major, major logical paradigm. We'll see a bit later. Based on this list, Rabbi Yishmael took them, especially Klal and Prat, and expanded Klal and Prat into many. Klal and Prat are Klal, Klal and Prat, Yimichal and Mashiach and Prat. So there's many, many different variations of Klal and Prat, but essentially, he's highlighting the offset between principles and details, which is what Klal and Prat is. So depending on how the Torah writes, is it right a principle, then a detail, detail and principle, detail and principle. But either way, he's highlighting this issue. So in that first list, you have 5 of them, which then become 13, but these 5 atomic elements of logical analysis remain intact. And Rabbi Akiva added a 6. Rabbi Akiva discussed something called Riboy Umiyot, when there's a klal uprat, he didn't see it as a general principle in a detail. He saw it as a riboy, everything's included, and then a mi'at, but it comes to exclude the following situations. Those I see as the six primary logical forces of analyzing the Torah, and then ultimately of deriving analysis from Shas. And I want to discuss them with you and show you how they're applied, not just in their original literary form to draw an idea from a pasuk, but what are the derivatives of each of these logical approaches. Okay, so the six are, again, in this following order. The order is important. Kal v'chomer. The second one is binyan av. The third is gzeirah shavah. The fourth is klal uprat. The fifth is davar lama me'inyano. And the sixth is riboy. Okay? Now, what's interesting is that when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wrote the Mishnah, he omitted most of this discussion and deliberation. The Mishnah doesn't have much analysis. The Mishnah is straightforward information, not the analysis of the Tanaim, and certainly not the analysis of the Amoraim. There are a few Mishnahs in which you have ongoing conversations. The conversations were there, they're recorded, they're in the Brisos. If you see the parallel Brisos to the Mishnah, you'll see that the same Tanaim that argue in the Mishnah argue in the Brisa, but they have continuing conversations. What did you mean? What did you say? Here's the proof. Here's the pasuk. How do you interpret the pasuk? V'yidechmahu. For some reason, Bidanasi felt, I imagine because he still felt very uncomfortable, but as if Tarash Balpah should be written over in a very limited way. So the Mishnah is very, very dry, very succinct, this halacha, very little associations, very little analysis, it's just streams of halacha, very little cross-sector associations from one sector to another. In the Brisos, you have that, and of course, in the world of Amorayim, you have an even more extensive analysis of the system, although, of course, much less analysis of the Pesukim, because that they felt that Tanaim had already exploited and already maximized. There's an interesting Rashi in Maseches Sukkah that I just want you to be aware of, that Rashi uses different terms based on the Gemara to describe the analytical activity of the Tanaim and the analytical activity of the Amorayim. Source number 5, Rashi quotes the word Gemara from the Gemara in Sukkah. He says, Gemara, the term means Svara, because the word Gemara literally means analysis and thinking and comparison. So according to Rashi, the word Gemara is Svara. Shayu atanayim achronim medaktikim bedivrei rishonim astumim. This is what the later Tanayim would analyze the more succinct and cryptic statements of the earlier Tanayim. Kimosha asu hamarayim achra Tanayim. Just like the Amoraim who came after the second generation Tanaim, the later Tanaim, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Yechileza, Rabbi Yashur, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda. So these are the later Amoraim. They would analyze the early Amoraim, Hillel, Shmaya, Talion, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. That same exercise was performed by the Amoraim on the later Tanaim, and that Rashi calls Svara. Whereas the Oso Diuk, the end of Rashi, should be Meha Tanaim, the Diukim that the original Tanaim were processing, that Rashi calls Talmud. I don't know if these two words refer to different processes. One is more pasuk-oriented, what halachas can we draw from a pasuk, whereas the later Tanaim and certainly the Amoraim were less involved in drawing chidushim from psukim. But it's clear to Rashi that at least the terminology of the analysis of early Tanaim was a lot different than certainly the Amoraim, with the middle Tanaim falling somewhere in between. Okay? Let's take a look at some of them. I don't know that we'll finish all of them today. Let's try to get a sense of how Chazal interpreted Psukim and how that led into non-Psukim analysis of Shas based on the same logic. The first area, and of course this appears to the first of both lists, so it's obviously the most primary, and we have a proof that it's most primary, and which I'll tell you in a second, is a Kal V'Chomer. A Kal V'Chomer is essentially creating a weighting process, W-E-I-G-H-T. We take two factors, two components, and we want to know which is stronger, which is more powerful, which is weaker. It's the most basic foundation of every logical system. Calculus is all based on X versus Y, which is heavier. And evidently, it's even more basic than a binyan av. A binyan av is a one-to-one comparison. Because a binyan av has to assume absolute parity, that the two factors that you're comparing are absolutely the same, or else that extrapolation and comparison will fall. Whereas Kal V'Chomer, you could, in theory, have some gap between the two as long as there's general parity between the two. And you have this a lot in the Gemara, where the Gemara will establish a Kal V'Chomer, and a Rishon will say, well, the two cases, they're different not just because one is more severe and less severe, they really exhibit other differences qualitatively. And they say, well, it's not that different. But that type of offset would torpedo a Mamatzino, because a Mamatzino requires a level of identity that's even more, precise. So Kal V'Chomer allows for a certain degree of discrepancy as long as you can identify the shift in weight between the two. Now, I quoted what I tried to do is for each of the midos, I tried to quote gemaras from either Baba Kama, Shabbos, or Menachos. And these are gemaras that you've seen already. So instead of bringing gemaras that were foreign to you, I didn't always have the opportunity. I tried to show gemaras that best illustrated the concepts. But famous Kal Vachomer we learned in Baba Kama, Richag Negichos of Chayev, Kirav Negichos of Lakol Shekein, where the gemara is establishing a Kal Vachomer, not between objects, but between activities, or at least day dispersals. If an animal gores over 3 days and it becomes a muad, then at least according to Rabbi Meir, it should certainly become a muad if it condenses its gorings into 1 day, because that seems to be a more severe and more heavy situation that would better reflect or condition violence in the animal. So this is an example of a kal vachomer, a classic kal vachomer. And interestingly enough, according to, let's see if I can find this for you, take a look at Rashi in Sukkah, Lamed Aleph. Rashi is basically working off of the Gemara in Psachim. I didn't call it the full Gemara in Psachim, it was just the editor's mistake. And if you look in Rashi, part Tess of Source 1, Rashi says the only midah that a person can wield independent of Chazal without a Masara is a Kal Vachomer. We'll see Tosfos will argue with this a little bit later. Rashi gets this from a direct line in the Gemara in Psachim. But that, in and of itself, demonstrates the primacy of a Kal Vachomer. It's at the beginning of the list, and at least according to Rashi, it and it alone is based on human discretion. Everything else requires a Masara, Zereshava, Binyanav. You can't just create your own ad hoc or freelancing associations between the two. Now, Kal Vachomer is the classic. Take two ideas from the Torah, two ideas in the system, which is heavier, which is weaker. What are the logical derivatives of Kal Vachomer that you see in the halachic system? Anytime the Gemara creates an evaluation of different levels of severity, essentially this is a derivative of a Kal Vachomer. So for example, I'll quote to you some derivatives here. Take a look at the beginning, source number Beis, the classic weighting or ranking between Deraisa and Derabanan. We're on a basic assumption that the world of Deraisa was more Chamor than the world of Derabanan, which is Kal. That's essentially it. It's not a classic Kal Vachomer, but it's the same logic. We're calculating the relative severity or less severity, and the connotation or the consequence will be at least in the Gemara and Beitza, which is one of the classic examples of Safik Deraisa L'Chumra, Safik Deraisa L'Chumra, at least according to the Rambam, according to Rashi, Safik Deraisa L'Chumra, Safik Deraisa L'Chumra. When there's something of greater severity, we have to be more vigilant about it. When there's something which is of less severity, because it's only rabbinic in human fashion, we're allowed to be a little bit more or a little less vigilant about the situation. So that'd be one example of the derivative of a Kal Vachomer. Another example is where you compare Chumros and Kulos, not just where one turns out to be Kal and one turns out to be Chamor, but where the Gemara sometimes says, Chomer be'ex mi ba'y, Chomer be'y mi be'ex. Where you take two ideas that are roughly similar, they're loosely associated, and you identify that X has a Chumra that Y doesn't, Y has a Chumra that X doesn't. So, for example, last year when we went in Masechah Shavuos, source number Gimel, the Gemara says, Chomer, source number Gimel, Chze Chomer b'Shavuos, the bottom of source number Gimel, which it was really referring to an earlier Mishnah, that a Shavuos Chal and Davar Shein B'Mamish. So you can make a Shavua not to sleep, but a Neder is Chal only and Davar Shein B'Mamish. Chomer b'Nedarmi b'Shavuos, there's a Chomer that Nedarim exhibits that Shavuos doesn't have, that you can be Neder Levatel Samitzvah. The ranking and evaluation is another way to get to the essence. The essence of a neder is displayed by this oscillation between chumra and kula that is atypical. Normally, one item is seen as chamor deraisa versus another item which is kal. The fact that the Gemara sees that there's an oscillation and a metering of the two, but what's it based on? And ultimately, these two halachos are based on the fact that neder is an issachetza, and therefore it exhibits a chumra, it could be mevatel mitzvah, because I'm not taking an edit to break a mitzvah, I'm just taking that this matzah is asr for me to eat, so I'm not really going against the mitzvah, those of you who learn Shavuos in the garden next year. But since it's a chetzah, I can't make a neder or not sleeping. Whereas a shavua is an isr gavra, so on the one hand, it doesn't need a concrete item to adhere to. On the other hand, since I'm talking about actions, I can't make a shavua levatel mitzvah, because then I'm conflicting directly with the mitzvah. So the Gemara is using kal vachomer, not just to arbitrarily locate more severity, less severity, but if it exhibits them, then ultimately there must be something deeper that can produce both a severity and a less severity. So you'll have this very often in Gemara, and sometimes, of course, whatever happens in the Gemara, next week I'll try to talk about the Rishonim and the Echaronim, what happens at their level, but let's just stick to the Gemara today. We see the Gemara trying to find the severity and the less severity. Obviously, very often the Gemara wants to analyze what's more severe, what's less severe in the case of a clash and an overtelly. So the classic case of an overtelly is essay, again, because you're learning menachos, is essay dacholot essay. And the Gemara in Yevamos, I just quoted the Gemara, but you've seen it, I'm sure, this year with Big Day Sitzes and Kilayim and Shatnez. At some level, and this is what makes the Ramban very intrigued, because the Gemara never articulates it, at some level, an essay has the strength to be docha lot essay. It's more important than the lot essay. And then the Ramban looks for it, al pi machshava, what makes it more compelling than the lot essay. Or if tumah is dechuya b'tzibra, assuming it's a dechuy, or if melechas achol nefesh is docha yamtif, the isur yamtif, what makes that overtelling factor so much more important than the avera that it's overtelling. Again, if it's a dichoy, if it's a hutra, then the issur is never stated, you know, the clash. But if it's a dechia, then the assumption of a dechia is a kal v'chomer, and the chomer element wins out. Another derivative is when the Gemara tries to analyze when there's a composite experience or there's a composite location, what's the ikar and what's the tafel? Where the assumption is that once we can identify ikar and tafel, then we'll know certain parts about the tafel that can be derived from the ikar. Basically, it's a logic of kal v'chomer. If a certain halacha applies to the ikar, it should apply to the tafel. It's not a quantitative kal v'chomer, or one is stronger. It's more of an aspect-driven kal v'chomer. So just take one example. The Gemara says, source number Zayin and Chet. Again, I tried to pick menachas. I was hoping some of you may have learned this b'vikiyas. The Gemara says, how do you know that if the goyim have surrounded the azara, that the goyim, that the kohanim can go into the heichal and eat kachi kachin? And Shar Menachas. So Gemara says, "Bakodesh Kadashim Tachlenu." There's a pasuk. You can eat even the Kodesh Kadashim. So Gemara says, "Lamalikra." Why do I need a pasuk? Special Gzeres Akasif to tell me you can eat in the Heichal. If you can eat in the Azara, which is only an affiliate of the Heichal, then you can certainly eat in the Ikar, which is the Heichal. Source number Chet. V'loi he tafel chamer min ha'ikar. Why should the tafel be more chamer? Why can I say, oh, the tafel I can eat, but inside I can't eat? So the Gemara is associated structurally that the Heichal is the Ikar and the outside is the Tafel. Doesn't mean it's stronger than the other, just means structurally, Kedusha-wise, there's a core, there's an affiliate. Once there's a core and affiliate, we can learn about the affiliate from the core. So we call it qualitative kal v'chomer. They're not really the same structurally, they play different roles functionally, but it's the same relationship of what we call subjugation. One is less than the other. Or the Gemara in Brachas I just quoted for you, because that's really, you see this in Halachas of Suda. The Gemara says, Avir lefanav meliach, betchila, pas ima, mevarach al meliach, upotir es apas, shapas tveil alo. At least according to the Mishnah, you can subjugate pas to other food. So if you've got a main meal, and the main dip is more important, or the main food that you're eating with the pas is more important, then in theory you can make a hadama and eat bread. Because at that point, pas becomes tafel, and the main meal becomes the ikar. So there's this association between what's more dominant, what's less dominant, and at least for brachos, unless there's a chiddush and suda, but at least for brachos, the bracha for the ikar can cover. And of course, this then fuels the entire field. I don't want to give too many makaros. What happens if miyigo b'makom chazaka, or miyigo b'makom edim, or edacha b'makom chazaka? What happens when you have two forces? Your first step is, which is the stronger force? And the assumption is the stronger force will overtally in the same way that eses dechalotas. So this entire field of thought is based on kal v'chomer, which at least is the way it's presented both by the list as well as the freelancing ability, is the most primary area of logical analysis, and it's at the heart of all calculus. What's stronger, what's higher, what's deeper, what's... You're always trying to figure out where on the scale two different items fall by comparing them roughly. Okay? That's the first root and the first rule. The second rule, and again, I don't know if I order them based on the list. This is still something that I've been thinking about this morning, so I'm still trying to think about how. But even on the list, Binyanav is next. So Binyanav, I just put it there because I thought it was more logically basic. Binyanav is what we would call evaluation of similarity. Take two ideas. We don't know how similar are they or how divergent are they. And this is what in later Sfarim is called Medama Davar L'Davar. When the Ram talks about analysis, Medama Davar L'Davar, and I'll tell you next week, or in 2 weeks, and Brisk then comes along and says, wait a second, before you medama davar l'davar, define your davar very carefully, or else your medama davar l'davar will be too loose and imprecise. So that's where Brisk steps in, if you're not here in 2 weeks. Like before the medama davar l'davar, what role does machshava play here? What role does machshava play there? What role does machshava play there? They all may sound like the same davar, but they're different davars, and therefore you can't compare them and extrapolate them. But the assumption of every binyanav is, if you can take two items, and you know a certain halacha about one item, and you hold the other item to be identical to that, then you could just simply slipstream the halacha to the new item. The same way, we wouldn't think that if the Torah says this person has a certain shavua, and then we say, oh, but he's wearing a black shirt, maybe you shouldn't have the shavua, because that difference isn't significant. And therefore, we can extrapolate no matter what shirt you're wearing, what name you are, which city you're living in. So at every point, we have to determine whether the factor that creates the offset is significant enough to prevent extrapolation and to prevent the binyan off. Okay? Now, the classic model, in terms of not the derivatives, what are derivatives of comparative analogy, but the classic model is what Chazal call emamatzinu. Okay, that's a binyan av ledavar echad. Well, essentially, it's a one-to-one ratio. You're going to learn X from Y. Did I give you an example of emamatzinu? I forget what I put down here. Right. So the Gemara wants to know, source number Aleph, again in Menachos, what happens when you bring shtei halachem with the kifsei atzeres? On Shavuos, you bring two sheep, and you also bring shtei halachem. The assumption is you have to lift the entire unit together. But which should be on top? Should the sheep be on top of the bread, or should the bread be on top of the sheep? So the Gemara says, Eni Odeah, source number two Aleph towards the end, Im lechem agave kvasim, Im kvasim agave lechem. So it's very simple. Ma matzinu b'chol makom, lechem lamala, afkan lechem lamala. If every single case has bread on top, then we have one clear profile of bread being on top, an unknown case of kivsi alteris and shtei lechem, we can just make a facile and straight association. That's a binyanav, or it's the language of the, getting back again to the language, that's called a binyanav because of echa. Binyanav from one model, from one template. Sometimes, as happens very often, we can't make a binyanav because of echad, because the kasav we want to compare to the paradigm is a little different. But if you stack up two paradigms and we generalize, right, if I want to compare Z to someone, there's so many differences, it's going to be hard to find your twin or your identical. But if I stack up Amiel and Z and say, well, what are your differences? Then I'm diluting the halacha, right, because you don't share that many differences, so you have to have a common denominator between you. So then I can derive from the mutual overlap between the two, but a much more limited scope. And so, for example, you had that in the Gemara in Bava Kamma, Davav and Aleph, Mazikin that are learned out from two other Mazikin. But the price you pay from learning one Mazik from two Mazikin is a very, very shrunken scope. So in theory, Avna Sakino Maso, Le'achar, Le'achar Basar Denaichi, would only be Chayev on the union between Bor and Esh, which would exclude Tamun and would exclude Kalim. It would only be something that both of them are Chayev in. And sometimes you don't have a 2-to-1, sometimes you have a 3-to-1, which is essentially what was happening in the Mishnah. Right? La Rizeh, in the beginning of Bava Kamma, Kirizeh, La Rizeh, Kirizeh, La Rizeh, Kirizeh, Hatzad HaSheva Shebohem, Shedakon Le'elcha Hazik, Shizik, Chava Mazik L'Shalim, Nezik Shalim. And then, of course, the question of Nachay is, why don't you have all the exceptions stepping in? And that's why the Gemara says L'Hil Chosem. That's why the Torah says that the halachos and the exemptions are case-specific rather than applying to the entire Hatzad HaSheva. So these are all taken from the overall concept of Binyan Av, comparing and establishing resemblance, similarity, or gauging for divergence between two factors. Now, what can break a mamatzino? What can break a comparison? Either you find a factor that's extremely significant, that's typically the breakage of a mamatzino, they're different in this area, or sometimes the Gemara will break a mamatzino because there's an aggregate phenomena with just too many differences. And even if we could argue one difference as being less significant and less influential, there's just too many differences, and therefore they've got to be different models, and you can't compare the two. So, for example, that's what happens in Imsachim, Daf Samach, Source Gimel, where the Gemara wants to compare a person that shechted an animal with the wrong machshava, he shechted a korban pesach l'shem shlamim, it should be the same, that's the base halacha that we know, as someone that shechts a korban pesach l'shem pesach, but for the wrong balam. So I'm shechting a korban pesach for the right korban, but for the wrong balam. It should be the same. At which point, Amar Rapapa wanted to create this mamatzino, source number Gimel, Amisa l'shmaitza kameh de Rav. I told Rav about this association. Hol v'shinoi kodesh, shinoi bailim, ma shinoi kodesh, whatever the halacha he was applying. Guva Amar li, and Rav responded to his Talmud Rapapa. Rapapa was one of Rav's Talmidim. Rava told his Talmud, lo, imar marta b'shinoi kodesh, if you have kavana for the wrong karban, these are the following criteria that applies. Shekem psula begufo, it's a psul in the guf of the animal, it's like pigle-like, at least Rava felt. The yeshna b'dalat avodos, it applies no matter when you have the wrong machshava, you could think for the wrong karban b'sha shchita, you could think for the wrong karban b'sha zirika, it would still be just as debilitating. The yeshna b'tzibor kiveyachid, and it applies to carbon seabor just as yachit. If you have a carbon seabor and you think they're wrong kavana, tamar b'shinoi b'ilim. And it applies even after the owner of the animal dies. We don't care whether the owner is still alive. If you have improper kavana with the wrong identity of the carbon, as opposed to shinoi b'ilim, which these four criteria don't apply. Namely, shinoi b'ilim is not a psil b'gufo. It only applies to shchita. It only applies when the baal is still alive, or so Rava thought. The Gemara then adjusted. And it only applies to carbon yachin, not to carbon seba, which doesn't have a baal. So the Gemara found four cases which create a gulf between the two. Now, in theory, and many Rishonim tackle this, not every difference is as formative and as divisive, but once you aggregate a lot of differences, then evidently the two are no longer comparable, and the Mamatzinu fails. So when we gauge, that means ultimately, if we want to have a successful Mamatzinu, we have to make sure that the differences are limited, if at all, and that they're insignificant. If either of those two clauses fail, then our Mamatzinu will break. If we have a significant differences, or a lot of lesser significant differences, then the Mamatzinu will fall apart. Okay? Sometimes you have, for example, where you're not just looking at a unidimensional X compared to Y, but you're looking at two poles, and you want to know which of the two poles are more similar to the case in question. That's called in Shas, it appears a few times, I have to do a search on how many, probably about 30 times in Shas, called Klach L'Derech Zo, or Klach L'Derech Zo. We have one fixed pole on this end of the spectrum, we have one fixed pole on this end of the spectrum, now you're not sure. Should the case that we're uncertain about be compared to this pole? Should be compared to that pole? And the Gemara is very aware of the flexibility in the elasticity of the analysis until it reaches some conclusion, which I'll tell you how the Gemara makes that conclusion. But for example, so it's what I would call it is a more complex Mamatzinu. Mamatzinu is a laser-targeted attempt. Can I compare X to Y? A Klach L'Derech Zo is I've got X, but I've got Y and Z, and I want to know is Y closer to X or is it closer to Z? So, for example, the Gemara says, source number Dallas, it's again, Menachos, it's a straightforward one. Can you write a mezuzah on stones? So what are we comparing? The element of ksiva. Can ksiva on stones be considered ksiva? So on the one hand, when it comes to get as one paradigm, you can't write on stone. It has to be on a sefer. Sefer krisos, which is text, which is parchment. On the other hand, when they wrote the Torah on stones, when they entered Eretz Yisrael, that was also called ksiva. So I've got ksivas mezuzah, it says uchsavtem, which of the two do I compare it to? So I'm not trying to learn out the entire halacha, as I was in Bava Kamma with Yochai Verpater. I'm trying to derive one component of the halacha, but by establishing structural parity between the ksiva of a mezuzah, is it more similar to ksivas haget, or is it more similar to ksivas avanim when they entered Eretz Yisrael? And here the Gemara doesn't really have to flinch much, because ksivas haget is more eternal, as is ksivas mezuzah. It wasn't time limited to the, as you would all think. Why would in theory you compare ksiva to a one-off ksiva in the days of Yeshua when you can compare ksivas mezuzah to date, not, hopefully not daily ksivas I guess, but frequent ksivas I guess. That's what the Gemara says. Nira lemi doma. Let's basically gauge similarity, the end of source Dalet. Danim ksiva hanoheges ladaros miksiva hanoheges ladaros. The ain danim ksiva hanoheges ladaros miksiva sheinin hanoheges ladaros. That's an easy one. Sometimes it's a lot more complex. Sometimes the Gemara establishes symmetry, and both poles are equally viable. And the Gemara has to call an exeris akasiv to solve the riddle. So, for example, the Gemara in Sukkah wants to know, when you sit in the Sukkah, do you have to sit at night? On the one hand, the Mitzvah Yeshivas HaSukkah is like Lulav. Lulav is only during the day. On the other hand, Mitzvah Yeshivas HaSukkah is like Miluim, day and night. Which of the two? And the Gemara doesn't feel like it can resolve that uncertainty on his own, independent logic. So in which case, the Gemara says, source number hey, Talmud Lomar, Teshvu, Teshvu, L'Gzer Shava. Basukas Teshvu, B'chutzal Amoy, Teshvu, Malahal, Yama, Filu, Lelos, Avhan, Lelos. So the only way that we know that Sukkah is more similar to Milum than it is to Lulav is because the Torah inserts a pasuk that creates a bridge. It's not really Gzer Shava. We'll talk about Gzer Shava a little bit later. But at least it's a textual tilt that associates the mitzvah of Sukkah more closely with the experience of Milum, even though Milum was a one-off and Sukkah isn't. That's really the underwriting contrary logic of the Gemara, because we already know from Menachos that we don't compare Shal L'Daros. So why would you compare Shal L'Daros by Sukkah? Whereas, well, at least it's a pasuk that compares the two. Sometimes the resolution isn't intuitive, nor is it based on Xeris HaKasav. It's based on the calculations, as I said before. So, for example, the Gemara in Menachos, again, I just picked Menachos, hoping that some of you would have read, you know, the Kiyos or something. The Gemara says in Menachos, when I bring a machavas, a certain type of a mincha, which is in a not deep, but a shallow pan, how much oil should I include? Should I include the amount of oil that I bring with a minchas nisachim, amount of oil that basically I append to a carbon behema, which is shloshes lukim for each yisarim. So when I bring a machavas, each yisarim should have shloshes lukim. Oh, source number of Av, line 4, klach l'derach zu. Maybe reverse it. Nemar kan shem, and then nemar minchas nedava. So the person just offers a minchas nedava. Minchas nedava has l'shem, and it's log yachad. So here you have a similar uncertainty. Where do I place minchas machavas? In the spectrum of minchas, is it close? Remember, this is all, I have to maybe state this again, this is all intra-division comparisons. We're not comparing one item to something totally unnatural. That would be a gzereshava. That's the next logic. This is all we sense that there's basic comparison. We want to know, can they be derived from the paradigm? Which of the two are they more similar to? Is Shinoi Kodesh more similar to Shinoi Bailim? Is Machavas? Is Sukkah? Sukkah and Milurim a little bit different. But Ksivas Haget, is Ksivas Mezuzah more similar to Ksivas Haget? We're not comparing across sectors. That's already Gzera Shava. We're staying within our catalogs, in our categories, trying to decide how close do they resemble for extrapolation purposes, for comparison purposes. At this point, we don't have a Gzeres HaKasif to tell us whether Machavas is more similar to the three-log Minchas Soles or to the one-log Minchas Nedava. So the Gemara pulls out its calculus. Let's see where it has more similarities to. Is it more similar in its halachos? And the other halachos that we know already, is it more similar to Minchas Soles, more similar to Minchas Nedava? The problem is the Gemara has a standstill. The standstill is called, if you see source number Vav, Yag'il versus Tavshat. Okay, when it comes to a minchas nisachim, it's tadir, it happens a lot, tav, tough. It's doche Shabbos, and it's doche tumah. And a machavas has all those elements. It's tadir, it's doche Shabbos, and it's doche tumah. Whereas, it shares yag'il with a minchas nedava. Namely, it's brought as a yachid as opposed to a tzibor. Biglal atzma, it is an appendant to another korban, and it carries lavona, which a minchas nisachim doesn't. When you bring the mincha with part of the korban behema, there's no lavona. But at least in theory, if it would have been a 4-3 contest or a 3-2 contest, we would have decided that a minchas machavas is more similar to a minchas nesachim or to a minchas nedava based on how many features it shares in common. Okay, so klach lecha l'derech zu is a derivative of a binyanav. A binyanav is we only have one factor, we only have one template, how similar can we stretch the halacha? Klach lecha is we've got two poles and we're trying to weigh the spectrum where on the spectrum it falls. Sometimes it's intuitive, sometimes we need a pasuk to help us out, sometimes we need a counting mechanism to show which exhibits more similar features. Okay? That's how Chazal used Binyanav. The question is, how do we use that logic in its derivative form when we analyze Shas? When are we using Binyanav when we're not using Binyanav? And the answer is all the time. That's what we always do. We're comparing one idea to another and seeing whether we're basically always using Binyanav, not to derive new halachas, but to create associations that then move halachas over, and we'll know that the same halacha will apply because the case is similar. It's not a kal v'chomer. A kal v'chomer is weighted, which is more weight. Here we're just trying to gauge resemblance, gauge similarity. So, for example, sometimes the gauging of similarity is a question of, as I told you a lot in the shir, you want to know how many units are in a set, and if they're all in one set, then that assumes a certain similarity. And then you can determine what the essence that unites all the elements in that set is. It's a fancy way for saying that scope reveals that essence. But scope revealing essence is predicated on the fact that you assume there's a common similarity that you can identify. There's a common opinion of that they've been grouped together. So, for example, source number Zayin and Ches, when Rav Oshia grouped together 13 Avos Nezikin, they created a more broad list of Avos Nezikin. Well, now I'm forced to find a common denominator, not between 4, but between 13. Because I'm assuming that they're all similar because they've been cataloged together. And now that changes my definition of a mazik. It has to be something that I can find in 13 elements, not just 4 elements. And when Rabbi Chiya expands it to 24, then all of a sudden, I'm assuming there's a binyanav that forced the cataloging. It's not a halachic process. I'm trying to carry over halacha. I'm assuming that if they were cataloged together, that they share a common identity. And that can teach me the common identity of Nezek, and then I'll be able to. I don't need to know whether a ganav is chayiv. Rav Oshia already told me a ganav is chayiv. But what Rav Oshia told me is that a ganav is chayiv as a mazik, by placing it in that catalog, that's the binyanav that he shares the identity of a mazik. That presumption is basically a binyanav. By putting them side by side, Rav Oshia and Rav Chiya, we're assuming parity. Or sometimes scope is revealing essence in halachas. Again, I just quoted a Gemara that you all saw, Amr Ilfa, a Gemara that you all learned this year. When is an animal that does shein or regal damage in Rishus HaRabim Pata? What is the scope of Rishus HaRabim? So Ilfa says that once the animal stretches its neck, for some reason that's not considered classic Rishus HaRabim damages and you pay. Whereas Rava, or the Gemara says a little bit later on, Rava says only the animal jumps out of its space. So what's considered, or to invert the question, what's considered Rishus HaYachid damage if you'd be chayef? If an animal is physically located in Rishus HaRabim. Ilfa said as long as the animal stretches its neck, which we interpret to mean unnatural activity, whereas Rava said only if the animal jumps on the back of the other animal, which means it lifts itself out of the Rishus HaRabim. So I'm now gauging the scope of the Ptura Rishus HaRabim. Is it broader? Is it more narrow? According to Rav, it's more narrow. The only time you're not pater is if the animal jumps up. Whereas according to Ilfa, the scope of the Rishus HaRabim Ptura is much more narrow because you're even chayiv if the animal just stretches its neck. But I'm assuming now that the range of cases in Rishus HaRabim that we pater a chayiv would create a broader or more limited scope of Ptura Rishus HaRabim, and then I'd have to assume there's a binyanav uniting all those Rishus HaRabim examples, then to be able to define the Ptura Rishus HaRabim based on that logic. So you compare Rav and Shmuel's question on Dav Chaf, if you Chaf Aleph, Mekatze Makom. So anytime you're stretching or contracting a set, you're working on the logic of a binyanav. You're assuming that everything in that set shares common logic, and therefore, based on the scope or the sweep of the set, I could try to determine the logic based on how many cases I have to or don't have to incorporate. So that's a very, very common application of binyanav. It's based on the predicate of a binyanav. Another application of binyanav, very similar to Klach Lecha L'Derech Zo, but a little bit different. So when Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish argue about how to define Eish, they both have a premonition and a pasuk, of course, that Eish is Chayiv. They just don't know which model to compare it to. So they each pull out previous models. They create that spectrum. Is it closer to Mamon or is it closer to Chitzav? Everyone agrees it's a Chitzav Mechayiv. Everyone agrees it's a Mamon or Chayiv. They're saying, now let's place it on the spectrum and see whether we move it closer to Mamon or closer to Chitzav, based in some cases on the text they have, but in some cases based on how they see Eish operating and how they see these relative models of Mamon and Chitzav. So that's another way that Chazal are taking the premise of Binyanav and applying it when you're not trying to derive A from B, you're trying to place something based on its similarity or dissimilarity. Okay? I'll make sure we're not taking too much time. Maybe we'll discuss one more. Okay. So that's the second trait Chazal used, Kal Vachomer and Binyanav. The third one, which I think is really, you know, one of the most stunning, and I think you need a Gzeira Shava to convince you of its applicability. What's the point of a Gzeira Shava? What does a Gzeira Shava do that a Binyanav doesn't? Gzeira Shava basically assumes that on your own, you wouldn't sense the logical overlap between two fields, if not for the textual bridge. And Torah is saying, based on a common word, see those two areas in halacha as more similar than you think and carry over halacha from A to B. If A and B were more similar, you won't need a Gzeira Shava. You could use a Binyanav. Gzeira Shava creates a bridge between continents that were too dissimilar to be united through Binyanav. And the Torah is basically telling you, be prepared to sense similarity in unnatural associations. You wouldn't necessarily equate Chveis Truma and Kapara, whatever Gzeira Shava's Chazal introduce. Okay? Which is why Tosfos takes the polar opposite approach. Tosfos in Sukkah says that you can apply every one of the mitos on your own. Rashi said only Kal Vachomer doesn't need a Masara, Rashi in Sukkah. Tosfos in Sukkah, it's an interesting Gemara, can you be Makshin on Dalad Minim to Esrog? Esrog has a din of Hadar, do you need Hadar by the other Dalad Minim? Mita says yes, so that's where the Machlokus emerges. Rashi assumed you can only apply a Kal Vachomer without a Masara. Tosfos, the exact opposite. You can apply every single mita, except for Gzeira Shava, because it's very, very speculative, because the Gzeira Shava is essentially encouraging, unifying areas that you would assume were dissimilar, but looking for the common denominator that you may have missed on the surface. And the presumption is there has to be some degree of similarity. Torah's not going to create a Gzeira Shava between Shatnez and, Peah, but it's not obvious. If you look a little deeper, you'd find the common denominator. And that introduces, as you've seen so often in this room, those who were in the shiur, what I call unnatural associations. Where the Gemara takes two ideas that you wouldn't think are similar, and all of a sudden, my goodness, there's got to be some uniting feature. Binyanav assumes basic holistic similarity. Essentially, the two run similar. They've got to be precise enough. How much divides them? How weighted are the issues that divide them? A gzera shava basically assumes structural dissimilarity with one point of overlap. That's the difference between a binyanav and a gzera shava. And of course, the classic gzera shava, you need the Torah to tell you. You can't make a gzera shava, even according to Tosfos, you can't just make up words. But we're using gzera shava like, that's what I'm looking for, mechanics and analysis all the time. So we're taking ideas, and this is, of course, the Brisker revolution, that predates Brisk. We're taking ideas which seem very, very different, and all of a sudden equating the two. Again, I keep saying that. A binyanav, always assume that you were dealing with, most of them, more or less the same universe. Minchas machavas, minchas nesachim, minchas solas, move it closer, move it further, machshava shalol lishma by a karbon, machshava shinoi bailim, what type of machshava? Very, very precise, laser, sharp definitions. Ksivas get, ksivas avanim, ksivas mezuzah. Sometimes you have strange, like the one about lulav. A sukkah is more like lulav, more like miluim, but that just shows that a sukkah has a shechina, which has already been established in other areas, like a mini mishkan. Gzera shava, you're talking about cross-sector associations. So all the mishnayos in Megillah, the famous mishnayos of Ein Bein. Ein Bein, Shabbos, Liyam Tov, Eloch HaNefesh. What do you mean, Ein Bein? Shabbos and Liyam Tov are very, very different. The answer is, they're not so different. And this, and then, and of course, the Gemara always says, is that the only difference? Aren't there other differences? And that's the gateway for the Gemara saying, no, they're more similar than you think. And stacking up the Ein Beins has reminded you, you should see similarities where you thought they were really different. That's just a provocative way to get you to say, oh, they only have one difference? Okay, there's this difference and that difference, but maybe they all stem from the same difference, and maybe those differences are less significant. Ein Bein Adar Rishon. Who would have thought that Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni, we think they're different months. Turns out they're not. Maybe they're both Adar, and that would have enough gemina for Shtaros and for Nidarim. So that's one example where you're using Ein Bein. Sometimes you'll have Mishnayos that will stack up, from a literary style standpoint, ideas that are totally different, but the fact that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wrote them together in the Mishnah forces us to say, well, what's the common thread? Why did he link them together? So, for example, in Menachos, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, in the beginning of the third parak, in the middle of the third parak, right, talks about which parts of the mincha are ma'akev. Is the solas ma'akev the shemen? Is the shemen ma'akev the solas? And while he's discussing the ikuv between the shemen and the solas, he talks about a broad range of ikuvim. The two se'irim of Yom Kippur, they ma'akev. Sar l'shem, sar l'azazel. The two kipsei atzeres, the two animals in Shavuot, so they ma'akev. The two chalos, the two starim of chalos, the bazichin, the svidei bazichin, the two minim of the nazir, the arba minim shebalulav, and of course this leads to the osios and tefillin. This is how we get into stam, right? Yeah, just because I don't really teach you stam. Stam is intentionally a topic that's suppressed in Bavli. You don't have meseches sofer. You have it, but it doesn't get gemar, right? As it's in meseches ketana. Why? Primarily because in the Torah, stam is suppressed. Ever ask yourself why there's a higher concentration of halacha moshe mesinai by tefillin than any other halacha? Something about tefillin that Hashem doesn't even want to say the word. Tefillin doesn't appear in the Torah. Tosfos Lamed Beis has to start a hunt. What does tefillin really mean? He has two deos. What does the word tefillin mean? You'll see this when we learn tefillin. Because to a degree, tefillin is our bond with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. When Hashem wears tefillin, something which is not spoken about that overtly in the Torah. All the halachos stem from halacha l'moshe Sinai. The word tefillin doesn't appear. And, like another famously suppressed topic, Lechanukah just happens to come up in Maseches Shabbos while we're discussing what types of materials you can light Shabbos candles with. Oh, let's talk about Chanukah for a little bit. Same thing happens with tefillin. I mean, what is stam and tefillin have to do with Maseches Menachos? I mean, we all call it Menachos because we know it's in Menachos. For an even playing field, if you ask someone where to find Hilchos Tefillin Mezuzos Hefer Torah and Tzitzis, no one in his right mind would say Menachos. It's Allah of Kachim, where we get to Menachos. Since the Mishnah was talking about Ikuvim, so Afilo Oysachas Makevis, the Gemara and Chavtesek, you'll start to learn in a few days. But this looping together of totally different topics along the same fault line of Ikuv forces the Gemara and then later Rishon to say, well, what's the difference between the Ikuv of Shnei Seirim as opposed to the ikuv of, let's say, Kinei Menorah? Obviously, that they're ma'akiv in different ways. The two animals in Yom Kippur are two different organisms. The two arms of a menorah are part of one vessel. Where does Solas and Shemen lie? Where does Osachas lie? So all of a sudden, you're comparing sectors that are totally different, but have that one point of overlap. How do the various constituent components interdepend upon one another. That's essentially Gzeirah Shavah. It's not Gzeirah Shavah, you're not taking a pasuk, but you're performing the same yoking together of different areas for that one point of overlap. Now that you see this, oh, that's what we've been doing for 2 years. Right? We're trying to find the two different areas, but how does the machshava perform similarly? Or another example, just taken, which was very, very dramatic this year, for those of you who learned Bava Kamma. Remember Rava's moment when he tried to gauge what's considered a hezek that's direct enough to be nezek shalim, and what's considered a hezek that's indirect, and we call it tzraos. Now, Rava wasn't a physicist. He didn't pull out his experiment, his Newtonian experiment, to determine directness or direct contact. So we had to import an index or a yardstick to gauge direct contact versus indirect contact. What was his yardstick? Who remembers? Zav. That's Mamshe Gezer Shav. Kol Shebezav Tameh, Benezek Mishalim Nezek Shalim. Kol Shebezav Tar, Benezek Mishalim Chasi Nezek. What do Zav and Tumah have to do with one another? Absolutely nothing. But there's one point of overlap. Because a Zav can only convey Tumah if it's generally direct. Doesn't have to be touching, because that would be too direct. But it has to be the application of force, Hesed, according to what we've shown him. Has to be Hesed. And just like Zav has to have a level of direct contact that's not physical, that can convey Tumah, we can then borrow that and superimpose it onto Nezikin. Or, as Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda discussed, by Mu'ad. Same thing. Why would Mu'ad and Zav, not Zava, but why would Mu'ad and Zav be similar? Because Zav may be a paradigm where events aren't sufficient, you just need passage of time. You need 3 days. And therefore, in response to Rabbi Meir's Kal V'Chomer, at least someone, it's not sure whether this is Rabbi Huda or someone in the base matter that was defending Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Meir wanted to apply Chomer to suggest that Richag Negichos of Chayev Kirv Negichos of Lokal Shekein, to which Rabbi Huda or Rabbi Huda's defender said, wait a second. We can import from Zav that there's certain events in Halacha that take the passage of time, and we can assume, even though there's no textual, right, this is an amazing moment, there's no textual cross-referencing between Zav and Mu'ad, but something about Mu'ad struck them as being formalized enough to require the passage of time the same way Zav did. So anytime you have that cross-sector associations, Rav Aaron did this all the time, this was Rav Aaron's real mastery. And as we get to the future shiurim, I'll try to give you examples. Rav Aaron would literally start shiurim zvachim by going in-depth into the role of machshav in Gittin, and the role of machshav in Stam, and the role of... And in some cases, the Gemara created those cross-references, but in some cases, Rav Aaron just created them on his own. He just understood what each halacha was composed of, what components made up each halacha. I compare it to someone looking down at a jigsaw puzzle of hundreds and thousands of pieces, but looking at from Shemayim and knowing what every piece is and what every piece is composed of and how the pieces can combine in different fashions. So, okay, let me take these two pieces and create a combination because they share a common overlap. I think I gave you one more example with this will end. You do this a lot on Shabbos. I don't know why I went to Menachas. I just thought that some people were holding Menachas a little bit more. How do you define Ketzira? So why is Ketzira important? Well, it's important for two reasons. A, because you can't harvest before the Ketzira Selmer. So what happens if I cut unripened fruit that animals eat? Is that called a Ketzira in violation of pre-Ketzira Selmer Ketzira? How does the Gemara try to prove that? From quoting a Machlokas about Ketziras Peah. Let's say I have a field and I cut in the middle of the field and then I cut some unripened fruit and then a week later I go back and cut again when it's ripened. Is that one long harvest because I started the Ketzira by cutting the unripened fruit and I only have to leave one Peah? Or it's two separate Ketzira because the Ketzira doesn't begin until later and therefore I have to leave Peah at both stages. So what does Peah have to do with Ketziras Elmer? The answer is there's one point of overlap. That's the Gzeirah Shavah. That's called Ketzira. And they share Ketzira, or they share Ketziva, those we'll learn Gittin next year, what's Ketziva for Get, what's Ketziva for Shabbos, or by Shabbos, every time we talked about what's considered Chves, Ketzira, or Zaria, or Charisha, we compared Shabbos to Shemitah, or Shabbos to Get, or they're totally different realms, but we're finding the common denominator that stands out between the two realms. That's a logic that the Torah is teaching us with Gzeirah Shavah. So the premise is Chazal were not inventing logic, they were just processing the logic of these Darche HaLimud, which have been passed down, saying, well, now let's apply them, even though we're not dealing with Pesukim, we're just dealing with how the halachos relate to one another. So we don't have enough time now, but you'll see next week, just to show you where this is heading, I hope to talk about Klal Uprat, which then gauges the relationship between generalities and details, basically induction and deduction, basically the fourth. These are all primary logical patterns, and basically I think there's six patterns of any logical field, and I think Hashem gave us these and want us to exercise them. So by highlighting Klal Uprat, essentially Rabbi Shmuel was saying, what's the relationship between generalities and the details that can stem from that, which is the heart of Nafgamina. The heart of Nafgamina is that there's a detail that comes from the principle. The fifth one is Davar Halamei Me'inyano, where there's an assumption that there's a context. Logic is all based on context. So what's the context that we're describing? And you assume the same halacha may act differently in different contexts. Mamon versus Yisurin. What's the context that we're dealing with? How do you establish context to determine how halacha that may be similar will act differently? And the final one, Rabbi Akiva introduces, those of you who are in my shiur, the kryptonite principle. Every halacha can best be judged by its failure. Rabbi Miut is what's the generality and where's the miut, what's out of the class. These, I think, are the six patterns that Chazal are exercising in response to the Midah Shatar and Dreshes. Okay? Okay. Stop here. I got to go to the wedding.